Today I have on Dr. Danny Purcell, and I'm so excited about this. First, I'm excited I love having men on when I'm talking about parenting, because it's a lot easier for women to come on. They think they can because they're moms, but dads don't think they can because they're dads. But you're a sought after speaker, trainer, and coach. You're called Jim Carrey with a PhD. So I'm going to make you prove that today. And you speak all over the place. You have 16 books, if this is updated. Is the latest Leadership Begins with Motivation?
That's correct. Thank you.
All right. Well, I love to give a shout out. It's hard to write a book and you've written 16. So you coach business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives how to increase income, freedom, and impact. But today we're talking about something a little bit different. I love talking about that, but I'm really excited to talk about your reading program.
Great.
And also the cyberbullying. This is, I'm really excited about talking about this. So jump in with your story.
Oh, thank you so much, Jen. Most importantly, thanks for spreading some joy in the world. We need a lot more of you and a lot less nonsense.
Practical. You're welcome.
I hope that the dads are listening to this as much as the moms, because everybody, you have a nice, a wide array of guests with lots of different specialties. And it was either Socrates or Keanu Reeves who once said, need a license to fish, a license to drive a car, but any idiot can become a parent. Well,
now that I'm a parent,
that's been proven true. But in defense of parents, nobody gives you a manual at the hospital. And so your podcast is doing great service for folks. So
my mission
is to bring joy back into education in the workplace. I do that in four ways. Like you said, I speak all over the world. Secondly, I have the world's leading reading engagement program online, which basically trains parents 5 minutes a day over a 2-month period how to get their kids to read more, read better, and most importantly, to love reading. Like you said, I train entrepreneurs and business owners, executives, anybody's looking to create a powerful presentation that gets their audience to take the next step, whether that's to purchase your, donate to your cause, or really just to invest in your idea. And then the final thing, which you mentioned, which I'm really excited about, I'm now working with a wonderful company called Cyber Smarties. They're out of Ireland. It was founded by a wonderful gentleman by the name of Dermot Hudner. And basically, it's a program that basically ends cyberbullying by teaching kids how to use social media in a positive way. So it's a social media platform for kids ages 5 to 12. And let's say I type you a message. I'm like, Jen, I think you're ugly. It won't let me send the message. Instead, you get a pop-up and it says, that's not a nice thing to say to Jen. Here are some possible positive ways to communicate with Jen. And it actually frustrates kids so much that they can't send the message that within only a couple of days, they start modifying the way they write messages so they're only positive. And so basically, the program's completely ended cyberbullying in Ireland. Now we're in India, we're in the UAE and Turkey, we're in New Zealand. And now my job is to try and get this in America, which I love it because I have the opportunity to work with schools and police departments on figuring out how can we work together to end the nonsense. A lot of people don't know the statistics in this country. We've actually lost in the first 4 months of 2023, we've lost more elementary school students in school shootings and we've lost U.S. troops in hostilities abroad for the last 3 years combined. Now, that's a crazy society, and this is not a political issue. This is an American issue. We need to end this right now. And the way you do that is by getting people from different ends of the aisles to work together. And that's what I'm excited to be able to do. It's a very positive, positive approach to solving a really negative problem.
It's interesting raising kids in this, you know, my oldest daughter's 31. We didn't have internet. We didn't have, we were playing outside still. And the issues that, like, I was born in 70, the issues I had as a kid and she had as a kid and these kids have as kids, they're the same issues, but we've given them different tools to become better at them, kind of, if that makes sense. You know, the drugs that we had drug problems when I was in school, and my oldest daughter did, but my 13-year-old daughter has new and fun ones that we didn't have back then. And so I think the issues are always the same, but the way that we're able to navigate those issues or the severity of them is different. And raising kids in internet compared to raising kids not in the internet, which I've had both experiences, totally different world. It takes bullying, which has always been something that happened, to a new level. And it offers anonymity for people also, and predatory responses. So, you know, this is a these are harder generations to raise. And I'm looking at my almost 14 grandkids now thinking, holy cow, I don't envy you this journey.
Well, it's just different types of problems. I mean, parents are always complaining about something. I mean, the Greeks 3,000 years ago thought, wow, you've got to write things down. You can't just memorize everything. And we've gone from that to, oh, television's going to destroy everything. And, oh, it's social media. Oh, no, it's AI. AI is the worst thing. And, you know, it's just a different type of problem. And, you know, I was interviewed on a podcast last week, and I was talking about the Cyber Smarties program. And the woman, she said, well, I don't think children should be on social media. And I said, I completely agree with you. I don't think they should be on social media either. That being said, whether we want it or not, the kids are going on social media. And would you rather your kid be trained on how to use it in a way, or just jump out into the cyberverse out there? And that's where I get concerned, because when you and I were growing up in the 70s, yeah, you get bullied at school, but at least you had your sanctuary, which was your home, cyber 24/7. And we really need to, and there's just easy ways to, like, one of the things we have on the site is so in order to be on the platform, you have to be a kid. They are approved by both the police department and the school. So no adults are allowed on the platform. No pictures are allowed on the platform. Kids have an avatar. Kids are only able to communicate with one another. We ask kids questions every day, like, how are you feeling today? Are you sad? Are you angry? Are you happy? And so what we can do is we can alert a police department. We won't tell them which child, because we don't know which child, but we can say, there's a kid in this class that's reported being angry 5 consecutive days. You might want to talk to this teacher and make sure we do some kindness activities in the classroom, something like that. I mean, prevent things. Let's be proactive about a lot of these things. We had a meeting with UNICEF a couple of weeks ago, because we have grand visions for the program. Like, I would love every kid in Africa to have a solar-powered cell phone and as to Cyber Smarties. But the great thing about kids is they're very honest. So we could ask a question like, have you eaten breakfast today? And if the kids are saying no, well, then we can contact UNICEF and say, well, this village, they need more food. Things like, there's so many possibilities. And it, again, social media kind of just happened in the last 10 to 15 years. And like every new invention, usually the lowest common denominator dominates at the beginning. But when you actually can you use this properly, social media can be a very positive, powerful tool. And that's what we're trying to teach kids. I'm very excited about it. And then since reading's my passion, you know, social media is a form of reading doesn't mean War and Peace. There's lots of different forms of reading. And when we start expanding our definition of literacy, I think we'll be served better.
I agree. And here's the other thing. How I can't even tell you how often I've been at a restaurant or at, like, on the airplane. Not that I'm saying it's a terrible thing, where this child is, they're using the iPad or the phone to keep the child entertained so that they can have an adult conversation or so that it's easier to travel. And I know we have all of the parental controls on there. And my daughter, a couple of years ago, she just played a YouTube short that was totally innocuous, but it opened up YouTube Shorts. And eventually you go from innocuous to, like, what are you watching and how did you gain access to this? Mm-hmm. And that kids are watching stuff that they don't know the deeper meaning of. So just because they don't know what certain terminology means doesn't mean that they're not hearing it. And that's not a good thing. It's not one of those, oh, they don't even know what they're talking about. Well, you're planting these seeds of information that you might not want to plant in little kids. And so it's also that snowball effect. I think if kids are going to be on it, yeah, I want control. If I had a controlled way for younger kids to be on the internet. The other thing is the science behind this, which I'd love for you to talk about. I used to do something called high-low when all the kids were young, where they could talk about a low, one thing that wasn't great about their day, and then three highs, three good things. And science shows that within 21 days, your brain is looking for the positive in the world. And eventually, I didn't know that when I was doing it with my kids. I didn't know any science behind it. It's just interesting to learn the science that suddenly your kids are like, you know, nothing really bad happened to me today, but I have four highs. And how kids like, because you, without realizing it, I was programming my kids to look for the positive in the world. And once your brain is programmed to do that, it's not that the negative doesn't happen. It's that it doesn't impact you as strongly because you're so wired for the positivity. And I know like this much about the science behind it. And I did it accidentally as a parent because I didn't want to hear about negativity at the dinner table. So there's got to be so much science in the fact that, because you said you're rewiring these kids' brains to think and talk in a positive way.
I'm so glad that you have 14 grandchildren, Jen. What a great it's wonderful to hear that. And really, everybody listening, you did something very basic. And this is what I tell parents. You spend time with your kids. That's really what it boils down to is I was very blessed. Both my parents they were wonderful people. And I remember when I was a kid, I wanted to watch the A-Team. And my parents wouldn't let me watch the A-Team because they're like, oh, it looks like a violent show. And finally, I convinced them, well, if you watch it with me, will you let me watch the A-Team? And so we watched the A-Team together. And when they saw that nobody dies in the A-Team, then they were like, okay, right. You can watch the A-Team. And I'm like, that was just a basic little parenting thing that they did.
Right.
I do little tricks, you know, strategies with my children. You know, I set the habit, you know, when you talk about habit formation, this is what I'm really interested in most. I tell people, and this is something, so I'm going to educate you on this, Jen. So everybody says it takes 21 days to change a habit. And to those people, I say, well, show me the research on that. It's a completely bogus number. I know exactly where the number comes from. It's from a wonderful book written in 1960 called Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. And in the preface of the book, Dr. Maltz was a plastic surgeon, and he noticed it took about 21 days for his patients to get used to their new face. Well, then a lot of self-help personal development gurus, people like Tony, well, I'm not going to say their names, but people that I really respect, they started telling people it takes 21 days to change a habit. I'm like, it's completely it's not based on research. So researchers at the University of London in 2009 did a habit study formation, and they found it took anywhere from 18 to 254 days to change a habit, and the average was 66 days. Now, I don't like the number 66, so on my reading program, I made it in days. We'll go into that another time. And it depends on the type of habit you're trying to change. So for example, Jen, if you want to drink a glass of water before breakfast every day, it might take you 18 days to turn that into a habit. If you want to quit smoking, though, that might take 254 days to change a habit. And here's why this is important for people to understand. Let's say you go on a diet and you follow it religiously for 21 days, but then on day 22, you fall off the wagon. Well, you blame yourself. And that's completely inaccurate because the research shows on average, it takes three times longer to form a habit. You know, when you were talking about the negativity, I was watching a show on television last week. It was horrible. It's called The News. And it put me in a room.
Violent.
There's a reason that every commercial during the newscast is an antidepressant ad. I'm like, you've just depressed me completely. And I love what you were saying. You had said something which really caught my ear was it's not that the kids won't hear negative things and see negative things. It's that you've armed them with a way of how to deal with them. And again, you didn't do anything that was rocket science, Jen. What you did is you just spent the time talking with your kids. And if we had more, I mean, I used to have a nonprofit called Real Dads Read, and I used to challenge the dads. I'm like, hey, dad, you want to know why your kids like football so much? Because that's the only time you spend with them. If you spent your time reading to them, your kids would be readers. Because, you know, whether you like it or not, you know, parents are the most important teachers and role models in the world. And the kids are, I mean, and you would know this too. We grew up around the same time period. I remember there was an 80s, there was all these anti-drug ads. And there was a drug ad where the dad, he's found some marijuana in his son's room. And he's like, where did you learn how to do this? And finally, the son looks at his dad. He's like, you, dad, I learned it from you. And I'm like, and the dad's all startled. And I was, dang, yeah. You know, my parents never cursed. So I didn't really curse because, you know, the only reason I cursed was I played high school football. That's, if you want to learn how to curse, that's a good way to do it. But, you know, being around my parents, they weren't like that. My parents didn't fight. I've seen in my entire life, I remember my parents arguing once and it was over Best Picture in 1982. My mom was happy that E.T. won, and Dad thought Gandhi deserved it. And they got in this huge argument. And then I just remember the next day when I came back from school, there was this big vase of roses with a my dad apologizing to my mom. But I'm like, but that was the environment I grew up in. That's what I got to right. see. Your kids got to see you actually parenting. To the single moms out there, I'm like, gosh, there's a special place reserved in heaven for single moms. I mean, these magnificent women that they're doing everything. But there's a lot of single moms who are actually married on his way. And I think a lot of relationships, we need to have that conversation. Hey guys, this is a 50-50 proposition. It shouldn't be 90-10 or 85-15. You know, you can do the dishes, you can walk the kids to school, you can, I mean, there's things that all of us are capable of doing. It is 2023. It is not the 1950s anymore. So you gave everybody that is listening right now the best tip. Spend time with your kids. I mean, if you really want to get to know your kids, mm-hmm. when you and I, Jen, were kids, one of my punishments, my parents would say, go to your room. Well, now when with my own children, the punishment is go to the living room, because they all want to be in their rooms on their devices. So it's just changing with the times and just spending time with your kids, though. I mean, you only have them. Kids are all starting to leave the house. And I've told them, if you want to live here forever, go ahead. I like my kids. I don't want them leaving the house. I think they're great. And it's depressing me now.
I'm sorry.
So those parents that are, I'm not going to let my kids be deadbeats. I mean, and they're not going to pay rent, but I'm like, you're going to have a job if you live here forever. But I mean, there's something to be said when I go around the world to all these multi-generational homes, as opposed to in America where, you know, then the kids just put you in a rest home or something. I'm like, huh, that's not, I prefer the way I see it in other countries. Now that I'm getting older, I really see it that way.
I definitely prefer it the way I see it in other countries. I think that that's true. And I have, like, all our kids except for one, they're all adults. And I grew up polar opposite from you. So it's interesting hearing you say that, like, swearing was such a thing. I didn't realize people didn't do it. And I really got embarrassed in junior high school at a church event when I said a swear and the guy said, you know, you could say, a kid my age said, you could say that in a different way. And I was humiliated because I didn't realize that people didn't swear. So you're correct. You are, without realizing it, you know, whatever environment you're growing up in as a kid, that's what you think is fairly normal. And even in situations of abuse or neglect or dysfunction where you think, I don't think this is how it should be, you don't have necessarily a comparison of, well, what should it be like? If this isn't what it should be, like, you don't have a comparison. And so, yeah, our kids soak up everything and they see everything. So growing up polar opposite from you, I had the opposite example. But every one of our kids that's moved out, they think they have it figured out. Teenagers aren't easy. They think, you don't know. You've never been through it. You're too old to realize what they're going through. And, you know, I look at all my kids and I'm like, all right, I'll be here. I'll be here if things fall, if you don't have it figured out. And every one of our kids has had to come back home. Mm. Every one of them. In one way or another, they were like, I'm sorry. You were right. It's harder than I thought. The economy is terrible. It's not fun to have roommates that you don't know, because they want to get out from living with their siblings, you know? But then that when they come back, when you're the safety net for your kids in whatever way, and they come back and they kind of get a handle on it and go out that second time, they've got it because you're there for them. But I think multi-generational is the way to go. And we've downsized our house. And my husband said the other day, I want to get a really big house because I want to be able to be there for our kids if they need to come back, or our grandkids or whatever. And so I think as a parent, you have this idea based on the society you're raised in. And that as you get older, that does change.
Yeah. Well, it takes solace. I like the Mark Twain quote. He said when he was 18, his parents didn't know anything. And when he was 21, he couldn't believe how much they had learned in just 3 years. So it sounds like you've experienced
that. Oh, I think that's so true, because they have to try. You know, at some point you have to give them wings to figure it out on their own. I do want to go back to your reading program, though. In the show notes, we have all your links in the description. All your links are there. I want to make sure, though, that people realize that you have a reading program that you're offering for free.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, I feel like schools in America do an adequate job of teaching kids how to read. But the question I always ask people is, what good is it teaching a kid how to read if they never want to read? I teach kids why to read because I've never had to tell a kid, go watch TV. I've never had to tell a kid, go play a video game. And I never want to have to tell a kid, go read. I want them to choose to do it on their own because they love it. And there are some simple strategies that I share with parents over the course of 67 days, just over 2 months, where the program has been shown to boost kids' reading test scores by about 2 to 3 grade levels, which is all fine and good. But what's really important to me, what touches my heart, is kids that read now love reading. And so there's some things I like to share with parents about the research on this. First of all, it doesn't matter what you read. What matters is how much you read. It doesn't matter if you're reading James Joyce or James and the Giant Peach. People who read more read better. And here's a tip for all those parents out there. The little boy who only reads Captain Underpants is going to become a better reader than the little boy who refuses to read anything. I mean, Captain Underpants is the gateway drug to Shakespeare, but you got to get the kid hooked on it first. And so that's what we're always trying as parents is what can we do to get the kid excited about reading? Because the more excited you are to read, the more likely you are to read. The more you read, the better you get. And so, I mean, so here's a strategy for everybody out there. So President Bush Sr., 30 years ago, signed a very important law in the United States. It said every television set in America has to have closed captioning. So the first strategy I share with parents is turn on the closed captioning. And parents will say to me, well, wait a sec. If the show is in English and the subtitles are in English, what good does that do? I'm like, well, that's a fair point, but let me make a point. Have you ever watched a show with subtitles and not looked at the subtitles? It's very difficult to do. Your brain is actually directed towards the text, and there's actually research to support this. If you look at reading scores around the world, the more kids watch TV, the lower the reading scores are in every single country in the world except for one. The country where kids watch the most TV also has the highest reading scores in the world. It's Finland. And people always ask, well, how can that be? I'm like, well, Finland makes really bad TV shows. And so what they do is they import all these old American sitcoms like Happy Days and Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island, and they have to subtitle everything in Finnish. The kids are constantly reading the screen. It's a very easy strategy. I mean, the whole point of my program is there's a study, a worldwide study, to find out what were the common characteristics of successful students around the world. And they stumbled upon a characteristic which just fascinated them. It was the number of minutes spent reading outside of school. So they looked at the low kids, the average kids, and the high kids. So the low kids, the 20th percentile, your failing students, bottom of the class, they averaged less than a minute a day reading outside of school. That didn't really surprise anybody. That's probably why the kids are at the bottom of the class. This startled researchers, though. The kids in the middle of the class, the 70th percentile, average students, C-level students, their average was 9.6 minutes per day. And so if I'm doing a live training with parents, this is usually when the first hand raises and a parent says, well, wait a sec, are you telling me if I can get my kid to read 10 minutes a day at home, I can take him from an F to a C? That's exactly what I'm saying. There is a lot of research to support this, but this next number really floored the researchers. The kids near the top of the class, the 90th percentile, your A minus students, do they spend 3 hours a day reading outside of school? No. Do they spend 1 hour a day reading outside of school? No. The average was just over 20 minutes a day. 20 minutes a day to get your kid from an F to an A. I mean, it doesn't take much. I'm always about minutes. So there's two things that the research also showed is, first of all, the minutes don't have to be consecutive. So you can do 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there. Second of all, being read aloud to is just as good as reading on your own. And you and I know this, that being read aloud to is like one of those great bonding moments. I've done trainings all over the world, Jen. I've never had a person say, oh, the way I learned how to read was grandma, Nana. She used to sit me on her lap on her rocking chair. And we'd rock back and forth, back and forth. And she had a book open. She'd smile at me and point to the words and go, alligator, ball. I've never heard a person say that's how they learned how to read. But this is how it's being taught in most schools. What the kid remembers is that great significant other in their life, a grandparent, a parent, an auntie, an uncle, a coach, somebody in their life took the time to read to them. And they begin, and all parents know this, you know, if you've ever had a young child, they bring you the same book to read every single night. The child is memorizing that book, and that's fine. Interest drives reading. Once a kid starts to feel, and this is why when people get on me, they're like, oh, are you anti-phonics? I'm like, I'm not anti-phonics. Phonics is a component of reading, a component. It's not the entirety of reading. You know, just because you can add, doesn't, and plus the other thing that people have to understand is English is not a phonics-based language. I mean,
no.
Spanish is a phonics-based language. I can teach anybody how to read in Spanish in 6 weeks or less. Mame, mi, mo, mu. Nice and consistent. You look at the letter A, you know, in Spanish. Letter A makes one sound. Ah. Always ah. English. Ah. Ah. A. Ugh. I mean, sounds like I'm about to vomit. That symbol makes 18 different sounds in English. Not a very good strategy. You know, now I'm a big believer in blends. There's a thing called blends in English. So like you put two letters together and they're fairly consistent. Like you put the letters TH together. And it's usually a th sound. So I tell you that. And then you go to buy some ingredients at the store. You go to the spice aisle and you see THYME. So you're like, oh, thyme? No, it's time. Because English is a nightmare. I have no idea how people learn the English language. It's crazy. But I'm just playing with people. I'm saying you have to look at reading from a holistic perspective. I mean, right. Yes, phonics is absolutely an important. Phonemic awareness is an important component, but they are just components. And that's not how it's kind of like writing. The reason kids hate writing is because most of the time they spend on writing is spent on editing, which is the worst part of writing. You know, maybe if we encourage kids to just get those ideas on paper and show them that, oh, editing is one part, revising is one part, creating is one part. You know, let's show the entire process. Same thing with reading. It's a process of reading. And, you know, different strokes for different folks. I mean, some kids respond better to phonics than others. I mean, I stuttered as a child. They were trying to get me hooked off phonics. I'm like, ball. They're like, no, it's just ball. But I mean, you know, whatever. I'm a big believer in if this is what works with this kid, this is what we should do. And this is what every parent needs to know. You are your child's strongest advocate. I've had 36 kids in my classroom, which usually means I have 36 different learning styles. Mm-hmm. I was interviewed on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and the interviewer asked, what do you think, public private schools? And I said, yes. She said, what do you mean? I'm like, well, some kids excel in public schools. Some kids excel in private schools. Some kids excel in a charter school. Some kids excel in a magnet school or a vocational school or homeschool. If this is what turns the kid on, you have different... You're an actual parent, Jen. Bill Cosby used to say, if you only have one kid, you're not really a parent because you know who did it. You're a real parent because you have multiple children. I have three children of my own, and this is the other thing that parents need to know. You can raise all your kids the same way, and they're all different. It's crazy. I mean, all three of my children are completely different, you know. So you have to have different. So like my kids are now all teenagers. So my daughter's 19. My oldest daughter's 19. My son's 18. And my youngest daughter's 14. And so one of the things is, and you already told people a strategy. When I spend time with my kids, I have a different book with each of my kids. So my oldest daughter, she's into Game of Thrones was her show. So we're reading this George R.R. Martin book. It's Fire and Ice, something like Fire and Ice. Mm-hmm. And so that's what she's into. There's language and things in this book, but I'm like, okay, that's what she likes. All right, we'll read that. My son, he's always into military stuff. And so we just finished a book on this British World War I and World War II general named General Adrian Artone de Wiat, who had like an eye patch. He was missing a hand. He was like wounded 13 times. He's actually a fascinating guy. I'd never even heard of him, but my son likes that. For some reason, my youngest daughter, she likes literature, which I hate. So we just read The Great Gatsby, which I hate that book. I hate the story. Actually, reading it with this time was actually good for me, Jen, because I realized, okay, F. Scott Fitzgerald is a wonderful author. I hate the story, but he constructs sentences very, very well. Now we're reading Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens. I have no idea. 200 years from now, we're going to look like the most illiterate society, because I'm, I have to get out a dictionary almost every sentence of Oliver Twist. I'm like, this was a book for the masses, and the vocabulary he's using and the cockney, it's unbelievable. It's kind of like you look at like the founding fathers writing the Gettysburg Address, and like politicians from this time period, they're going to look at their letters or just going to be emails being like, WTF, question mark. I'm crazy. So, and so, oh, and then my wife, she loves, we read the Diana Gabaldon Outlander series is what she liked. But then we read these books. I love these books. They're by Beth Brower, called The Unselected Unselected Journals of Emma M. Lyon. And they're just wonderful. I'm like, wow, they're actually delightful. I would, it's not something, I mean, I like reading biographies and things like that. But the point here is, look, you have different significant in your life. Why don't you choose a book that person likes? And that's a great opportunity. It's almost like a little vacation or a date. Like, oh, this is just you and me. This is our little thing. And again, it goes right back to what you were talking about earlier, Jen. It's just spending that one-on-one time is so important.
I have had a rule with my kids that they have to get through high school. And, but I don't care how you do it. So I've had some kids that went to, I have one that went to Job Corps, two that got their GED. I had one that went to college for high school. It was really important to me that they stayed in school. They got their high school diploma, that it was a diploma if they wanted to go to the military and not a certificate, which is a GED. That they were getting an education and that they felt confident and good about themselves, because so many kids learn differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were in the normal public school, and it was like a square peg in a round hole. And I realized really quickly, there are lots of ways to do this. And it doesn't matter to me which way you accomplish it. It matters to me that you are accomplishing it. And that, I think, helped a lot. Some of them were public school, and some of it just, it really didn't matter. I was not invested in the how, I was invested in the what. Good. And for reading, you know, I remember one of my boys in second grade just struggling, and he had such a great teacher. And I just said, what are you interested in? Pokemon, which was not something I was excited about. And I said, if we let you get your levels of reading and your time reading in reading Pokemon, and every time you go up a level, I will give you these $15 packs of Pokemon cards that he used to trade. Right? Like, I pulled out all the stops, bribery. And I had like four of these packs of Pokemon cards in a drawer, and he would open the drawer and look at them and think about like, what one did he want next? But his reading level skyrocketed. This was a kid that was bombing and angry, because if they don't learn how to read, they're not doing history, they're not doing art, they're not doing math, they're not doing everything will fail if they don't know how to read. And so for me, it was like, I don't care what he does in history, science, math, I don't care. I want to focus on reading, because once that happens, those other subjects are going to happen. And he was a great example, because all we did was encourage him to read only what he wanted. And then I remember him coming home and saying, I want to learn about Komodo dragons. Mm. And I said, well, let's pull that up online and you have to read it. And he knew how to, he wanted to learn it so much. So once they read the Pokemon stuff, which is not really, like you said, it doesn't matter what they what they're reading. It doesn't matter. Once I gave up that, I don't care what you read, what do you want to read? He became interested and fascinated in other subjects. Mm-hmm. And he never had trouble in school after that. And so that was a really good example of, as a parent, letting go of focusing on what it is that they're ingesting and just letting them do what they're passionate about. And then the rest of the world opens up.
I am so glad you're in the world, Jen. I'm like a Baptist in your front row going, amen.
Well,
I just, that's wonderful.
Teaching it though. This is what your program is teaching.
So you hit upon a couple of things. I mean, first of all, parents need to know 4 out of 5 struggling, reluctant readers are boys. Boys and girls are very different. You know, girls will read books about little boys. Little boys don't like reading books about little girls. I mean, there's some exceptions out there. I can't prove this because there's not research specific to this, but my theory is, if you look at the majority of kindergarten through second grade teachers in America, it's like 96% female. And I think what's happening is a lot of teachers, they read their favorite books to their classes, but a lot of the female teachers, their favorite books are about bunny rabbits and puppy dogs and stuff. I'll give you an example. There's a great one of the Diary of the Wimpy Kid books, which I love, by mm-hmm. Jeff Kinney. I can't remember which one it is, but Greg Heffley's mother decides she's going to have a mother-son book club. And so she invites all the neighborhood boys to her house to bring, and they all get to bring a book. And so she's going to read with them. And so the mom, the books she selected were Anne of Green Gables, Little House on the Prairie, Sarah Playing and Tall, Little Women. And the boys, the books they've selected are like How to Cheat at Video Games, The Book of Bodily Functions, dinosaur books, monster truck books, you know, Komodo dragon books. And I'm like, I think there's a disconnect there all the time.
Yeah.
You hit it upon another point. I mean, it's just extraordinary. You did, Jen, and you did this somehow just naturally. You're like a perfect student. It just bothers me. In high school, I was forced to read The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. No offense to the people that like The Scarlet Letter. It's about Hester Prynne, and she commits adultery, so she's forced to wear a letter A on her chest. And I raised my hand, and I asked my teacher if I could wear a B on my chest because I was so bored reading that book. And, you know, the thing is, why is literature so much more important than technical reading? I can't think of a job out there where a boss says, Jen, I need you to read this novel by tomorrow. But that's what the public system does. They get you to really hate reading. Whereas somebody like your son, maybe you could just give him a topic like Komodo dragons. And all of a sudden he gets lost on the internet for hours.
Yeah,
it might not be the greatest sources, but he'll be reading Wikipedia entries on Komodo dragons, and then not all these fictional stories about Komodo dragons. Oh, there's the San Diego Zoo. They have some. I mean, you get lost, but that's reading.
Right.
We're using definitions from 100 years ago. I mean, they say, oh, kids don't read today. I'm like, I completely disagree with that. I think people are reading at such a higher rate now. The average person in a single day is seeing more print than a person who lived in the 19th century saw their entire life. I mean, these people are like, oh, it's that time of the month. I got a newspaper, a 3-page newspaper I can read. I mean, now you're being bombarded with alerts on your phone and things like that. So I completely disagree with that, but I love what you did. When I taught second grade, I had a boy, Kiara, and I taught most of my life in South Central Los Angeles, and Kiara's first grade teacher told me, Kiara don't know nothing. I'm like, well, thank you for that. Well, Kiara, who don't know nothing, comes into my class one day and he's like, hey, Miss, this was a long time ago. He's like, Miss Bissell, you see Barkley last night? He had 18 points, 16 boards. I'm like, thank you, Kiara. Because from that day forward, Jen, every day after lunch, I'd sit Kiara on my lap. We'd read the LA Times sports page together. And just like your son, by the end of the year, one of my top readers. And that kid didn't read anything but sports, but it doesn't matter. What I did is I got him interested in reading. And so when all these people love to shove dismal reading activities down his throat, he still realizes, well, that's one type of reading, but reading can also be fun. Reading can be for information. Reading is something that can fill my curiosity, which is what reading really should be.
Danny, thank you so much for being on today and sharing this. I'm really excited about your program and getting information out. And I just appreciate you so much and what you're doing.
Thank you. We're in the mutual admiration club. I mean, no, there's so many negative things in the world right now, and you can focus on those. You can focus. I don't deal with people that are focused on problems. I deal with people that are focused on solutions, because anybody can gripe.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a real person to, I mean, it took you, you know what, I'm going to do a podcast. I love podcasts. I'm like, my gosh, there's all these people. This is what I love about technology. Everybody fears technology. Here's another way of looking at technology. Right now, there's some kid on a dirt floor somewhere in the world, barefoot, maybe didn't eat breakfast, but if that kid has an internet connection and a laptop, that kid has the same access as the head of Google. The whole world just got a lot smaller, and I'm excited because I know one of those kids is going to cure cancer or do something about climate change or maybe unite everybody so we stop bickering and start doing things together again. I mean, I look at those possibilities, and that's why, you know, I stopped watching the news, because it's just a president, great quote about that. When he was president, he had told the media that he read the sports page first every day. And a reporter's like, "You are the leader of the free world. Why don't you read the front page every day?" And he said, "Well, the sports page celebrates man's accomplishments. The front page just shows all of his failures." I'm like, "Oh, that's a great perspective. I'd much rather fill my world. My wife is so great because she only watches comedy. She's laughing all the time." I'm like, "You know what? Yeah, life's too short. I don't need to look at something that happened around the world that I have nothing. I can't do anything about it. What I do is I try and tackle the things that I can do. So what I try to do is, how do I build positive habits in children? And I look at this technology. COVID was one of the greatest things ever to happen to me because it got me thinking beyond just the United States. I mean, I can do other day I did an interview with South Carolina Television, with a television station in Nigeria, and a podcast in Nepal, all in the same. I never even thought about that. That's really cool. And that's the great thing about I love listening to you talk about your children, because I tell people, you know, it's not the 1950s anymore. I don't know if college is worth the money. I mean, I don't know if you need college. I think what you do need is a library card and a passport. And I think you need to see the world, get to know that people everywhere are pretty much the same. There's differences, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of similarities. But that's what I love about reading. It took me, I hated reading growing up. My father was a librarian. I hated it. You know, the public library was always my least favorite place. It always smelled funny. The furniture was uncomfortable. There was always some elderly woman telling me to be quiet. There's always a freaky homeless guy who thinks he's a vampire hanging out by the bookshelves. I always hated the public library. It wasn't until I started teaching in the inner city and I saw a lot of my students didn't have what I had. And I said, shame on me. I mean, I was blessed. Both of my parents were in the home. They loved each other. They read to us kids, in front of us kids. We had plenty of access. I mean, we weren't wealthy by any means, but we always had food on the table, you know. And seeing some of the things I've seen, I'm like, wow, not everybody. My wife had the most negative upbringing possible in Singapore. I mean, a school system that labels you immediately and tells you basically from the age of 8 what you're going to be when you grow up. You know, when I spoke in India, I spoke at one of the schools I spoke at was this all girls school. These two girls come up after my presentation, all excited. One wants to be a lawyer. The other one wants to be a doctor. I'm like, that's great. You know, are you going to go to university here in India? Or maybe you'll go to Great Britain or the United States? I'm like, oh, we're girls. We can't leave India. I'm like, get back in that auditorium. Got them all back in there. I'm like, now is your moment, ladies. I mean, India is now, not at the time, but now it is. India is the largest country in the world by population. You know, mm-hmm. It's a very young democracy. It's only 6 years old, and yet they've already elected a woman prime minister. America still has not elected a woman president. I mean, right now, there are twice as many women in India as there are people in the United States. There are actually more women in India with a graduate degree than there are people in the United States. And I told those girls, well, you just made it my mission. The next prime minister, the next CEO, and the next really good mom is coming out of this audience. You know, I get pumped when I'm around kids. I'm like, hey, sometimes you need somebody else to believe in you before you believe in yourself. I believe in all of you. They only give me the best and the brightest. Now let's go. Let's make the world better. I mean, you got to get those kids pumped up. You got to believe in them. That's the environment I grew up. I have a photograph of me when I was 4 years old wearing I'm wearing space boots, a San Diego Chargers jersey, a sheriff's badge, and a fireman's helmet, because I wanted to be the first ever astronaut, professional football player, police officer, and firefighter. That's the world I grew up in, Jen. I think every kid deserves to grow up in a world like that. And just like with your kids, your story is still being written. Who says that there's one route? There's lots of routes to success. And the people that always say, yeah, and it's not that I don't believe in a college education, but I read biographies of successful people all the time. And there's one commonality in most of these successful people's biographies. Most of them dropped out of school. So what are we doing wrong in school? I mean, maybe we need to figure out better ways to, you said it earlier, it's square peg, round hole. It's a lot easier to teach in one way. And I tell this to teachers all the time. There is no easier job in the world than being a bad teacher. You can easily be a bad teacher for 30 years. And there's no harder job in the world than being a good teacher. But there's also nothing more rewarding than being a good teacher. I mean, that's why I became a teacher, is I totally look into my kids' eyes and I'm like, man, one of my kids is going to cure cancer. One of my kids is going to become a Supreme Court justice. I tell them that all the time. Kids, people like, we don't do this in society. I had one of my university students the other day told me I was the first teacher to tell her she did such a great job. I'm like, you're a postgraduate student. You never had a teacher encourage you? That's disgusting. That should be against the law. I had great teachers my entire life. People, I mean, I've had bad teachers, but I've had a lot of good teachers. When I hear people say they only had one or two teachers, I'm like, wow, what's going on there? That shouldn't be the case. But I don't blame teachers either. I understand everything's thrown at them every single day. You know, every societal burden has to be thrown at teachers. But this is why I love working as an educator. I'll work, like, a school district will bring me in for 2 days, Jen. I work day one with the teachers, day two with the administrators. But on the night of day one, I work with the parents, because I think you need all three of those players on the same page. And that is how you move mountains together. But we need to communicate better. This is everything in America. People aren't communicating. Like, hey, let's just have a rational discussion. We can disagree, but we don't have to be rude to one another. You know, my wife and I disagree all the time, but we love and respect one another. That's the only rule. I mean, we're starting to lose that. And I really don't want us to lose that. This is something, this is critical. This is a national security issue as far as I'm concerned. Let's practice a little bit more kindness. And again, I actually prefer being around people that disagree with me. It's good. It gets my mind working. But you don't have to be rude when you disagree with a person.
Right.
That's fine. I'm sorry, I just ramble. You get me excited. I'm going to get back in the classroom right now, Jen. I'm thinking about my kids.
You need to. You need to do that. You need to get back in. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being on and sharing. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jen.